Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Greetings, Grapple fans, and welcome to the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the AI Podcast channel. We are beginning to settle down somewhat after WrestleMania, and we have just had the superstar shake-up. But no shake-up here. I'm still your host, Danny Wales, and I am still joined as ever by my audio tag team partner, Mo Chatra. Good evening, Mo.
Evening, Andy. How are you doing?
I am not so bad. Looking forward to having this chat, actually. Post-Mania, everything that's going on, lots of moves back and forth, and I think some fascinating topics to discuss here.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Plenty happening since WrestleMania, so lots to talk about, and we'll try and do it justice in the next hour or so, for sure.
Yeah, we will certainly try and do that. We'll do our best to keep it below an hour, though, Gags. Don't you worry. And also, before we finish up this show, there will be a little discussion to be had on certain JBL and Mauro Ranallo, but all of that's still to come. But let's kick things off, Mort. Post-Mania, obviously, we were all excited. We had our post-WrestleMania podcast where we broke down the full card. We enjoyed the whole weekend. What about the Raw and SmackDown immediately following it, though? Were you how did you find them? Were you overwhelmed, underwhelmed, or somewhere in the middle?
Perhaps somewhere in the middle. I didn't think there was anything on either show that was particularly outstanding. It was good to see a couple of returns or debuts, but there weren't really any super massive, groundbreaking angles or really, significant storyline advancements which could really shake up the company, other than the announcement of the superstar shake-up. But other than that, pretty formulaic shows. That was sort of disappointing, but the fact that, we had a fantastic crowd both nights, which was obviously in large part the crowd that attended Mania, and we had a fantastic atmosphere at both shows as a result of that. But there weren't really any amazing matches, and nothing special in terms of angles. So certainly not blow-away shows, but the shows were okay. They were fine. Nothing more than that, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, the crowds were fantastic. They always are, I've got to say. They always are. Lots of singing, lots of chanting, lots of fun in there. Obviously, they like to, WWE really like to get across that, the night after WrestleMania, that they boo the guys they normally cheer for, and they cheer for the guys they normally boo for. Well, apart from Roman Reigns, of course, because they boo for him all the time. So that one didn't work. I'm sorry, that just did not pass. I've got to say, although the crowd was great, there was something about the shows, it just didn't have quite the same excitement of, you know, maybe 2-3 years ago, you know, or was it 3-4 years ago when we had the whole, the cash in from Dolph Ziggler, and there was something electric about some of them shows, almost to the point where WWE is maybe, am I wrong in saying this, but maybe taking it for granted almost, that the atmosphere just carries it and makes it kind of feel special.
Pretty much that's right. I mean, as you say, I mean, they've had some historic post-WrestleMania Raws. I mean, if you think back almost 2 decades to the night after WrestleMania 14, I think it was, back in 1998, X-Pac, who was known as Six-Pac in WCW, turned up and cut this superb promo directed at his former company. And it was a really monumental angle, which certainly was very significant in the whole momentum of the Monday Night Wars. And you know, it was not much long thereafter, in fact, a week after, that Raw beat Nitro in the ratings for the first time in nearly 2 years. And after that, it was a fascinating battle in the ratings. And now, years later, we then had Brock Lesnar returned to the WWE on that Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania some 5 or 6 years back. And as you say, Ziggler with that cashing in of the Money in the Bank to win the WWE Championship. Or, you know, magnificent, memorable post-Mania Raw moments. But no such thing for Raw, no such thing for SmackDown after WrestleMania. And it was pretty much just all about the crowd and crowd reactions, and one or two, obviously, notable returns, but nothing, you know, too significant. And I think that they decided, well, let's shake up the rosters and no, let's try and advance storylines after all of that. So they had to be in a bit of a holding pattern as a result of that decision. And other than those couple of returns and NXT debut, excuse me, NXT debuts, there wasn't really a great deal else to talk about.
No, I mean, you're talking about past ones there. I remember as well the Raw the night after WrestleMania 19, when The Rock had finally beaten Stone Cold at WrestleMania. That was the debut of Goldberg. And here we are, segue alert. We actually had Goldberg signing off, but not officially signing off. He's gone, but he's not necessarily gone. But strangely, they didn't do it in the show. They saved this for afterwards, and this was part of Raw talk. What did you make of Goldberg kind of saying, well, I'm gone, but, you know, never say never, i.e. if the money's there and they come up with a good enough opponent, you know, I might just be back again next year.
Well, I think it's sensible to keep the door open. Obviously, there's a lot of fans who really couldn't care less about him and, you know, would be quite happy if they never see him in the wrestling ring again. But, you know, there's also quite a sizable chunk of the overall WWE fan base that, you know, does respond to Goldberg and does like him. And, you know, he was getting some superb reactions at most of the arenas that he appeared at. Obviously not huge number of appearances, but when he did, you know, some of those reactions were superb. But I think it's the right thing to do. I think given it's the wrestling business, you never say never, and so it's sensible to leave that door open, because, you know, if the right opponent is there and the money's certainly right for him, then you know, it might be sensible to, you know, do business. And, you know, the promo itself was quite gracious. And obviously the reactions he was getting from some weren't great, especially at WrestleMania. So it was a good way to get the fans back on side. And he certainly handled things quite well going out. So, no, I had no problem with the way that was handled.
Yeah, it's almost curious. I mean, he actually made a joke about himself. his son climbing over the guardrail took more bumps than he did. I thought I thought that was good of him. Listen, what on to the debuts. Now, probably one of the biggest pops of the night on that Raw was probably the debut of the Revival. I mean, it was good to see them called up. I mean, we talked about it. We thought it would probably happen. It was certainly rumoured. For me personally, I think Raw is the right place for them. I think the setting there, the tag team division there, kind of ideal. Great pop for them though, wasn't it? Really, really huge reaction from that really hardcore audience there.
Oh, there was. That's right. It was a really good reaction. The kind of fan base that follows NXT, were packed in that arena, and that's not necessarily going to be the case every week. Certainly as you go into certain parts of the United States, there won't be a great deal of fans at those Raws that follow or regularly keep up with NXT. So some of their reactions will be pretty quiet. I personally felt that they would have been a better fit on SmackDown, just because I feel that Raw is a show that's supposed to be the more sports entertainment orientated show, and SmackDown should be the one that's a bit more focused on the in-ring action. And I felt that the latter would therefore be a better fit for them. And that's not to say that, they're not good characters and they can't cut good promos, but I think that their strongest point is certainly what they can do in the ring from bell to bell. So that's why I thought that, if they move across and perhaps reignite their feud with American Alpha, that would certainly have been good for both teams. But that's not to be. And, in fairness to the WWE, they have put Revival over strong, had a clean win over the New Day this past week on Raw. So it certainly looks like they've not been brought in to make up the numbers. And if they're given a good push and booked well and their strengths are accentuated, flaws are hidden, they can be a real asset and help to make the WWE tag team division on Raw great again, because it's certainly been in the doldrums for the last 6 to 9 months, despite the efforts of Gallows and Anderson and also Cesaro and Sheamus.
Yeah, I just think there's a lot of fresh matches there for them right now. And then the matches that we recall, them having with American Alpha, that they can have them great matches again somewhere down the future. And it's kind of saving them up, and to the point where once they do finally get to have them, they will feel fresh again. So I like it. I think it's a good move for me. But I mean, we're talking to SmackDown there. I mean, what about that one then? I mean, starting with Ty Dillinger, I know that the way that they did it, I give you to the count of 10. That was obviously that was ideal for it. I thought they really could have, they could have milked that just a little bit more, and actually counting 1, 2, 3 all the way through. And I just think that would have really milked it for the moment. But what do you make of the debut of Ty Dillinger then moving to SmackDown? Because personally, although I think it is too soon for him, and I would have liked him to stay on NXT longer, if he is going to come up, I think SmackDown is a much better fit for him.
Yes, I agree. He's another one who's very good in the ring, and he's got a gimmick in the whole 10 thing that has the potential to get over in the way that the whole Yes thing did, and how that works so superbly well for Daniel Bryan. That's not to say that, he'll be as big as Daniel Bryan was, but, he's certainly got something there that can make him a strong cult favourite. And, we need those cult favourites on both brands, on both rosters. So, the gimmick and also the fact that he's, very good in the ring, underrated actually, means that, he's the perfect guy for that brand. And, he's not, I don't think, going to be somebody who'll be pushed, all that, the kind of main event level. But he can certainly fill a role that was previously occupied by Dolph Ziggler, as in the dependable, solid Han as a babyface, occupying mid card, and you know, being able to work consistently good matches with a variety of opponents. So that was good to see that, you know, he's been slotted into that kind of position, and I think he'll do quite well there.
Yeah, I just hope he doesn't get beaten so regularly that people just kind of give up caring about him in the way that they did with Dolph Ziggler. But anyway, so what about Shinsuke Nakamura? Now, you know, this is a debut that we've long been waiting for. I've got to be honest, I was slightly perplexed by it. You know, him just coming out and just being in the ring, and that was it. I'm not so sure. It really hit the notes that it could have hit. But all the same, great to see him finally called up to the main roster.
Well, that's right. And what that suggested to me is that whilst they knew they wanted him up on the main roster and they knew they wanted him on SmackDown, they quite haven't figured out exactly what to do with him, who they should match him up with, who they should pair him with. Now, one possible explanation is that when they brought him in on that SmackDown after WrestleMania, at that point in time, they hadn't quite made their minds up exactly how the whole superstar shakeup would work out and which wrestlers would be slotting in on which brands. You know, there was a lot of speculation that AJ Styles could have ended up on Raw. Obviously, that didn't happen. But if that's the only explanation as to why I think they didn't quite do anything more with him than just basically turn up and, you know, just say, hello, everyone. And that was pretty much all we got from him. And it wasn't a great deal different. Even on this week's SmackDown again, set up against several opponents, but no one individual that, you know, he can definitely have a firm program with just yet. But no, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, he'll be fine. I mean, his reaction that first night was superb, but his reaction on this week's SmackDown was superb to an even greater degree. And, you know, he was in front of a crowd that wasn't that typical hardcore WWE fan base that watches NXT. And the fact it wasn't, and he still got a superstar reaction, certainly bodes well for him. So I think he can be a very, very important figure on the SmackDown brand this year. But I think they do, you know, you're quite right, need to come up with a solid storyline for him pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's just kind of perplexing. A slightly odd way to introduce someone if you're not going to use them physically, but... you know, by the by, it was all in all a pretty nondescript SmackDown, considering, you know, it was straight after Mania, I felt. But so we had the announcement anyway that, you know, we were going to get this superstar shakeup, as Vince called it. Bit of a cheesy name, but there you go. Before we get into all of that though, Mo, you know, before we start talking about, you know, who's gone where and all the rest of it, two guys that stayed on the same show and kind of ramped things up was Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns. Now, actually, briefly, before we touch on that, a little word on that, the opening to the Raw immediately following WrestleMania with Roman Reigns in the ring with a crowd just chanting for The Undertaker for, what, five, nearly 10 minutes, and him just entering the word, him just muttering the words, you know, this is my yard now. I've got to say, probably one of Roman Reigns' finest moments so far in WWE.
Oh, it was. It was magnificent. The crowd was electric. Just fantastic heel heat. And, you know, that was just one of the great atmospheres we've ever seen on a Raw after WrestleMania, for any Raw for that matter. The crowd, in fact, expended so much energy in booing and creating that vociferous reaction that they almost burnt themselves out in those opening 10, 15 minutes. And, you know, that was certainly great. And the fact that he only muttered a few words and saying, you know, this is my yard now. Now, that was just really, really good. So, you know, I was completely fine with that. And it certainly was good for his character as well. He didn't go out there, cut a cheesy baby face promo that was going to be shit on. You know, it was a kind of almost tweener type promo that, you know, if you like him, you know, it won't come across like a heel type promo. And, you know, if you don't like him, then, you know, it just works right into your kind of feelings about him. So it was very cleverly done. But it was almost a predictable reaction that he got, and they knew exactly what the reaction would be. And, you know, they booked that very well. So that was good.
Yeah, very succinct, very smart, like you say. And I mean, you talked about heel heat. I mean, let's remember, Roman Reigns, he's not a good guy. He's not a bad guy. He's just the guy. Or is he a guy? He's the dog now, isn't he? Isn't he the big dog? So is he? He's not a bad dog. He's not a good dog. He's just the big dog, or something like that. Anyway, I'm sure he'll suffering succotash. I'm sure he can get that one out there somewhere. So what about this whole thing with Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman? I laugh, and I don't apologize for laughing, because I thought from start to finish the whole thing was hilarious. From the sit-down interview with Michael Cole and the crowd, just from the sight of him on screen, the crowd started booing. And then we could hear them singing, "Roman sucks, Roman sucks." Then Braun Strowman attacks him, the crowd start cheering. They then chant, "Thank you, Braun." "Thank you, Strowman." Yeah. "Thank you, Strowman." And when he's on a stretcher, they start chanting, "You deserved it. You deserved it." It tickled me. I thought it was really funny. And it's just, you know, if Vince McMahon must be the only person that still thinks Roman Reigns is actually still a babyface, or even potentially a tweener, you know, that the guy's a heel. He's a heel with a crowd. Just embrace it. Really has to embrace it now. I mean, the way that the crowd cheered to that whole thing. But I've got to say, I mean, it obviously it had to be, you know, a dummy for pushing the gurney over the side and onto the floor. It absolutely had to be, because it is too risky to do that. Otherwise, it was quite clearly, you know, that they've done that. You know, it was well done, but still clear that they'd done it. But you know, what really got it for me, what pushed it over the edge, was Braun Strowman apparently lifting an ambulance and turning it over. Now, okay, the guy can bench press ridiculous amounts, but lifting, what, a 1.5-2 ton ambulance and pushing it over that just happened to have some stoppers next to it and something else behind, you know, it went from the spectacular to the just plain silly, and it was just way too silly, like 80s silly for me more. As funny as it was, it just kind of, I just think it went a bit too far.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things I used to moan about was that they didn't come up with angles that was outside the box. And you know, if you think back to the Attitude Era, these are the types of things that they regularly did, you know, these backstage skits that took probably several hours to film and several takes.
Sorry, but they did, but they also tried to do them in a somewhat believable manner as well, though.
Well, yes and no. I mean, we had some pretty goofy things, cars crashing and cars being set on fire, and you know, if you think back to Katie Vick and you know, the boss man with the coffin being dragged behind a vehicle and all that. You know, we had some really, really hokey stuff. You know, we had the boss man also being you know, hung at WrestleMania, and you know, we've had some really, really nonsense angles. And you know, I think that they're just trying to kind of go back to some of that kind of stuff, which is a bit outside of the box. So, I mean, if you think about it, up until last few months, we really haven't had that. Whereas, in recent times, we've had that. We've had the whole thing between Bray and Randy Orton, where they've come out with, you know, two or three acid-induced angles and skits, you know, such as Bray's compound or whatever it was being set on fire by Randy Orton. So they're trying to do things that are a bit different. So I applaud them on the one hand for trying things that are different. But on the other hand, you know, there's trying to be different and there's different, which is just naff. And, you know, in the case of this angle, it really was naff because it was so obvious that, you know, he was, you know, Roman Reigns wasn't on that gurney. And, you know, it was so clear, as you say, with that jump cut that, you know, that was not one single take and he didn't fall off from that height. And yeah, it just looked really, really cheesy and not in a good way. I mean, you have some stuff which is cheesy that can work. And, you know, you think back to some of the Santino Marella stuff. Some of his cheesy stuff worked quite well. But in this instance, no, it really didn't. And, you know, if the whole idea was to try and get some sympathy for Roman Reigns, well, dear, oh, dear, it was a complete and utter failure then. Because if anything, it just got Strowman over as the biggest face in the company, if those reactions were anything to go by. So whatever the whole intention was with all of this, and I suspect it was Vince saying, look, we need to do something to get Roman Reigns, you know, in the good books of the fan base. Well, it just didn't work at all. So they've got to go back to the drawing board and figure something out. The obvious thing, as you say, though, is that, they need to just accept the fact that he needs to be healed. But as we saw with John Cena for so many years, they just refuse to accept the reactions and continue to push Cena as a face. And in the end, you know, he is somewhat accepted as, you know, what he is. And in a way, I can understand why they feel the way about Roman Reigns. Because, look, I think Roman Reigns is a superb talent, one of the best talents in the WWE. And I think if you asked a lot of these fans at these live shows, well, why do you boo Roman? They'll say, oh, he sucks. And if you ask them, well, okay, why does he suck? And I don't think they can give you a straight answer. I think it's just because it was one of these things that just spontaneously started at a Royal Rumble 2 and a bit years ago. And then it just carried on after that. And yes, I mean, you know, you can argue, well, you know, fans are booing because they don't accept him as a babyface. But, you know, he's not even like a clear-cut babyface. You know, he's this kind of tweener-type character that is quite cocky, is quite arrogant in some ways. And, you know, even then they still boo him because it's just the thing to do. And, you know, I think when you get down to it, even if he was to turn heel, you know, I'm just wondering what type of reactions he would get. So maybe that's why the WWE thinks that, look, yeah, okay, he does get those negative reactions on TV, but actually at the house shows where they do get a distinctly different audience, he actually gets, you know, a very, very different reaction. A lot of the house shows, which are not televised, obviously, Roman Reigns, you know, does get very strong babyface reactions. But the TV shows are the ones that they tend to draw more of an older fan and less kids, because obviously it's a school night, Monday night and Tuesday night. And so therefore, you know, it attracts a certain type of audience that more inclined to boo him. And, you know, I just find it wholly frustrating because, you know, beyond all of the booing and the reactions, that's just a fantastic talent. He's one of the most consistent main event workers in the WWE. He has so many great matches over the last 18 months in main event matches. And, I mean, he's not a great promo. He's not a great personality. But he's got star presence. There's no doubt about that. And, And I just think that you know, the whole booing thing is just something that sometimes does get a bit blown out of proportion.
Yeah, I will concede more that, okay, it wasn't a coffin being dragged down the road. It wasn't a dog being fed to its owner. It wasn't a man trying to have sex with a corpse, but it was a bit silly. And I do think that if they just allow him to turn heel, allow him to go full on heel, allow him to have that freedom with his character, I think his promo work and his character will really come along. And by WrestleMania next year, he'll just probably organically become a babyface anyway. And I agree with you. They will then have probably the biggest star in the company. But we could talk all night about the whole Roman Reigns thing. On to the Superstar Shake-Up and the movers and the shakers. It started early. Apollo Crews to Raw. Absolutely earth-shattering news, Mo.
Well, talk about business kind of changing announcement, before Raw even come on the air. That was
before we knew about Kurt Hawkins.
Oh God, yeah. No, it took Twitter by storm, trending number one worldwide, wasn't it? yeah, it was just completely underwhelming, wasn't it? Nobody really cares about.
The way they started the show, though, I mean, John Cena's music hits and you think, then obviously, yeah, all right, okay, it's the whole Miz parody thing again. A pretty good start to the show. I do feel that joke has kind of wore thin. It wore thin sort of about 10 minutes into the whole segments they were doing a couple of weeks ago. But that thing is worn thin now. He's done it. Okay, move on. But yeah, a good way to kick off the show straight away. Miz has come across, then Dean Ambrose has come across. And I think the initial thing was it strengthens the mid card on Raw. And as we'll get to later, the turnaround, I think, is even better for SmackDown, though.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, that's right. And I've always been of the view that SmackDown is the more wrestling-orientated show. Raw should be the more sports entertainment-orientated show. And I think that Miz is somebody who is more suited to Raw. You know, he's somebody who's more of a sports entertainer than somebody who's more about being, a world-class in-ring talent. And that's not to say he's poor in the ring, certainly not. You know, he's very good. You know, he's improved a lot in the last couple of years. But he's certainly not on the level of a lot of the top guys that are now assembled on the SmackDown side. And, I think they can do a lot more with him in terms of character type stuff. More storyline type stuff over on Raw. And, some of the stuff he was doing in the build up to WrestleMania with Cena, alongside, Maryse and, Nikki Bella was really good. There were one or two really cheesy angles there, but, some of the promos back and forth were, amongst the highlights of the, build up to WrestleMania. And, if they can do some of that kind of stuff, over on the Raw side, where I think it works a bit more better than it does on SmackDown, then I think he's well suited to that. The only kind of shame of it is that whilst he was over on SmackDown, it did feel that, he's on the cusp of, moving back into world title reckoning. And now he's moved over to Raw, where their equivalent of that belt, the Universal Championship, is held by a part-timer in Brock Lesnar. Well, I just don't see Brock and The Miz going back and forth in a program anytime soon. So the best that he can hope for is a feud for the Intercontinental Championship. So whilst it looked like, he might be getting back into main events after a several year hiatus, I just don't think that's going to work out for him. So that's the only flip side, or downside rather, to him moving back to Raw.
See, I don't see that as a downside, because personally, I don't think he's main event status. I don't think he's that main event caliber. I think he's a really good mid-carder. He's a good talker. He delivers a promo really well. I think he's functional in the ring, but I don't see him as a main eventer, and I'm glad he's not going to be involved in the world title, because for me, he's not that level. He's a level below, and he's good at being that level. But I think I might be in the minority that really don't see him as a main eventer. And I think there are a lot of genuine bona fide main event stars on that roster, and I really don't think he's one of them. I just think he is very good in that next level. And what he does is, I think the likes of the US title or the Intercontinental title, that level, I think what he does is, if he's got that belt or he's going for that belt, he does a lot for it. He really helps that title and that level. And I just don't see him really bringing enough to the top level. And I really don't see people being invested enough in him if he's at the top of the card. But I know I'm probably in the minority of feeling that way.
Don't get wrong. I'm not one of his biggest fans, and I don't think he's... I think there are people that are certainly more deserving of being a world champion or universal champion in the WWE, but I don't think there's any denying that he's improved significantly in the last couple of years. And he's one of the few people in the company that I think is a really effective heel. I think it's very, very easy to dislike him. That's something that you can't say about a lot of heels. So, one of the strong kind of points about him. Whereas a lot of the other heels in the company, even the Kevin Owens, he's so likable that, you almost don't want to boo him. And so you can almost argue in a way that Kevin Owens isn't an effective heel, because, the whole point of being a heel is that you're supposed to be disliked. Not be a cool heel, not get cheered and get these almost babyface type reactions. Whereas with the Miz, he's expert at getting, heel heat. And, in that regard, he's very effective at what he does.
I do feel, though, that I agree. Yeah, people do want to get behind Kevin Owens. They do like him. But I think Kevin Owens is great in that he doesn't try and embrace it in any way. He doesn't try and be a cool heel. As soon as people start cheering for him and getting behind him, he turns on them. And he's so adept and ad-libbing and turning on the audience and twisting it against them and quickly getting them to boo him again. I just think he's brilliant at that. And he's probably one of if not the best mic worker they've got on the roster at the moment.
Oh, he's very good in that way, yes. And that's part of the reason why he does sometimes get babyface reactions, because, he's so good on the mic and the way he kind of puts some of his opponents down. That type of stuff gets over really well with the audience. And, part of being an effective heel is to try and cut out all of those things that fans like. So if you think back to Chris Jericho and when he turned heel 9-10 years ago, and he started cutting very monotone promos, he was cutting out all of the stuff that people liked about his promos and trying to really kind of tone down his whole personality and his promos. And that worked really well, and his reactions were very good. That's not to say that Kevin Owens or anyone else who's supposed to be a heel that gets good reactions should follow suit and do the exact same thing. But it just goes to prove that, to get genuine heel reactions when you're a heel in this day and age is very difficult. Just in the same way that, as we know with Roman Reigns, for a babyface to get proper babyface reactions is also quite difficult. People, respond to personalities and certain things that they just find cool. And it could be anything. It could be a ring entrance. It could be a catchphrase. It could be anything. And if they latch onto that, then you know, it can take an individual very far. And
I think there's a real element of that sort of long-term respect amongst the fans as well. I think, you know, that they feel that, you know, you've really delivered in ring consistently over a period of time. I think there's almost like that respect level in the way that John Cena seems to have turned a lot of people, you know, onto his side over the past couple of years, the way he's been willing to put people over, the way he's clearly helping the younger talent and the up-and-coming talent and the guys coming across from NXT, you know, willing to work with anyone, willing to adapt his game and try new things. I think it's almost like where Kurt Angle was, you know, years ago, where people were, you know, I've said this before, you know, people were singing the "You Suck" along to his song, not to give him the heel heat, but in justice to play along with the game, and that actually, you know, that they genuinely respected him. And I think John Cena's kind of turned a corner in the past couple of the years with a lot of fans, a lot of hardcore fans even, you know, in their opinions have changed a lot. And I think there's a growing sort of that kind of feeling amongst fans, you know, that it's you're earning their respect as to what you can do in the ring consistently. And I think there are some of the baby faces that probably don't quite have enough time under the belt that once they've got, you know, enough matches, that they garner the respect from the fans, that they really hold them in such high esteem that they're ready to cheer for them. You know, if they, you know, they feel that they're the baby face and they're supposed to cheer for them, they respect them, they'll cheer for them. I feel that there's, you know, maybe it's the change of audience over the years.
Yeah, I mean, the audience has certainly changed compared to the past. And, you know, in the past, generally, heels worked a certain type of way, cut promos in a certain type of way. Their body language, their outfits, even their hairstyles in a certain type of way. And you know, fans knew, okay, well, this is a person that we're supposed to boo. And likewise with baby faces, you know, they worked them, you know, in-ring stuff in a certain type of way. And, you know, classic tag team matches where, you know, were very easy to kind of put that kind of face heel dynamic. And, you know, in this day and age, you know, fans don't respond to those types of things the way that they used to. And so for promotions, it's, you know, and it's not just WWE, it's all of the promotions out there. It's just about understanding what gets a negative reaction, what gets fans pissed off, what gets them to boo, what gets them to cheer. And what worked 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago doesn't necessarily work today. And that's a part of the problem that they're having with Roman Reigns, is that, you know, they have tried to rely on their kind of thought process around booking him as a character in terms of the promos they give him and the way they book him in feuds. That worked, you know, in the past, but clearly that doesn't work now. And rather than accept that and try and do something different, get him over as a face, they still persist and persist and persist with, you know, their tried and tested ways of doing things. And it's just simply been a complete failure. And that's where they just need to understand, okay, well, what is it we need to do to get the fans to cheer him? Now, if you think back to last year, he was involved in, I think, in an angle with Triple H where he just completely battered him. And, you know, at the start of that, he was getting quite, you know, poor reactions. But when he really, you know, went to town on Triple H, he was getting great reactions. And even if you think back to one or two times when he's reformed with Seth Rollins last year and did spots which were like those that they did when they were part of the Shield, you know, they got good reactions and he got good reactions for that type of stuff as well. So it's not to say that he just won't be cheered under any circumstances. They just got to figure out, as I say, what can get the fans to cheer him. And, you know, part of it might be to turn him fully fledged heel, and you know, really amp that whole thing up. And if that gets over, then they can subtly turn him back to face again. And by that time, those negative reactions should be gone. But, you know, they just have almost some cowardice there in pulling the trigger for somebody that they choose to be the face of the company. And we saw that for years with John Cena, and now we're seeing it with Roman Reigns. And I just don't think that, you know, they'll turn him fully fledged heel. And I think that's a shame because, you know, they're just hurting themselves and they're hurting him by not kind of embracing what's so obviously a required change in his character.
Yeah, we can't help this, but we keep moving off topic here. Bringing us back onto the superstar shakeup. What about the whole women's division thing there? We've seen Mickey James and Alexa Bliss move across to Raw, which got quite a positive reaction. I mean, the fans seem to be quite into that one. And consequently from that, we've now had Charlotte move across to SmackDown. So what about the women's division then? In the
Don't
way
forget
that that's
Tamina.
Changed around. Oh, sorry, yes. And Tamina, who I just assumed was on SmackDown anyway, but, you know...
Well,
so what about that then? I mean, that I've got to say quickly, what you know, that whole thing on SmackDown, you know, calling out the entire women's division, and there was like four women stood around him. That was quite sort of depressing, really.
Well, I was getting excited actually because I thought, oh, this is good. They're finally going to acknowledge that it's not worth having a separate standalone women's division on SmackDown, and he's trading those four women for the entire cruiserweight division and moving them over to Tuesday nights. But that wasn't to be. Instead, it was to announce that Tamina and Charlotte were transferring over to SmackDown from Raw. And, you know, Charlotte's an exceptional talent. She's very good. But even with her presence, I just don't think that division quite has what it takes you know, to really be anything special. And I just feel that the whole roster would be so much more effective as a unified division on Raw. You know, they typically book two segments per Raw for the women. And if they had the whole of that women's division exclusively on Raw, you know, they could book 3-4 segments on a 3-hour show quite easily and do some really, really good stuff. And the different types of feuds and programs that they could book in terms of, you know, the variety that they'd have on offer would also mean that the characters would feel a bit more fresh and less stale because they've got
opponents
to work with.
Yeah, you wouldn't get that overexposure that we tend to get at the moment. And the fact that you've got the same two or three women constantly fighting over the title on both shows. And it does. It takes the shine off it, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, with Charlotte now, she's got what, maybe 2-3 individuals that she can work with on SmackDown. No, she's not going to feud with Tamina. She's not going to feud with Natty, well, not immediately. It will be Becky and Naomi to begin with. And after she's feuded with them, where does she go from there? So it really is quite... Well, yeah, I mean, if they decide to bring Asuka in, maybe around SummerSlam, then that might be a good opponent for her. But... it just feels very thin on the ground, you know, that roster. And even on the Raw side as well, there's a bit more depth there, but not a great deal more. And I just think they're missing a trick here. And I'm hoping that if the women's divisions on both brands stagnate this year, then WWE might accept, okay, perhaps the best thing to do is just to unify the divisions and make them exclusive to one of the two brands. And likewise with the cruiserweight division, I just feel that that would be far better suited to Tuesday nights, purely because I think that Tuesday nights and SmackDown specifically should and has always been and should always be the more wrestling orientated show.
So what about the tag team division then? I mean, we've seen the Shining Stars come across. You know, that does nothing other than to give, you know, someone to comfortably beat, you know, another jobber team. But the New Day moving across, that's quite a big one, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's a big one, but it's a very good one as well, because they really were starting to feel stale on Raw. You know, they were still getting very good reactions, but you know, as champions, you know, they'd done everything they could do on that brand, fought with everyone on that side. Whereas coming over now to SmackDown, you know, they can have a good feud, you know, when Kofi's back, or even before Kofi's back, with you know, the revitalized Usos at some point, who, by the way, had a really good match with American Alpha on SmackDown this week. I was really impressed with that match. You know, there's maybe one or two other teams there as well that you potentially have a feud with. And they could always decide at some point to turn New Day heel, or even maybe go heel with American Alpha. And, you know, that feud as well can be quite good. I mean, New Day are another team that I actually think are underrated in a way. They have worked, you know, a lot of good matches in the last couple of years, and several excellent matches. And you know, they don't get enough recognition for how good they are in the ring. And I think they have got several teams there on the SmackDown side that they can do some good work with. And also, you know, Primo and Epico were really a joke act on Raw. But maybe on SmackDown, with a slight tweak to the character and not flogging timeshares, then you know, it might actually mean that they feel a bit more relevant on the SmackDown side. And speaking of relevant, I think Aiden English, now that he's lost his partner Gotch, you know, as a singles competitor, especially with that singing gimmick, could potentially get over. And I think if they do something with him, you know, then, you know, he might still be a useful singles competitor on the SmackDown side.
Well, we're talking of the singles division on SmackDown. I mean, the WWE Championship feels really, really cold. We've got Bray Wyatt, who's supposed to be the main contender. They've just had the match at WrestleMania. They're going to have a rematch, this House of Horrors thing. It just feels like phony crap, as it's done all the way through that feud. He's gone off to Raw, so obviously nobody actually believes that the title's going to change hands there. That title couldn't feel colder if it was sat in a bucket of ice. But the flip side to that is Kevin Owens comes across to SmackDown with the US title. Suddenly the US title feels bigger than the WWE Championship. We've got Sami Zayn come across as well. We're going to be getting Rusev on SmackDown. We've already got Shinsuke Nakamura now. We've got AJ Styles. SmackDown feels like it's going to be the show that you really are going to have to watch every week, because in-ring product could just be absolutely fantastic.
Oh, God, yeah. No, they've got a really deep roster now. Some exceptional talents, and the different kind of matches that they can have should make that show really good. And on top of that, they've got Ryan Ward as the kind of main booker. And of all of the writers in the WWE, he's the one that impresses me the most. And I think the combination of him as booker, and also just the depth of talent with AJ, Nakamura, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, and you know, several others. You know, Dolph Ziggler is a very, very good worker too. Rusev is as well. You know, they should be having really good shows every week. Not least for the reason that they should be having very good, or if not excellent, matches on TV every week. I mean, if you think back to some of the glory days of SmackDown, such as when Paul Heyman was the booker, you know, we would be getting an excellent match pretty much every week. And there's no reason why they can't return to that with the roster they've got. They really have no excuses. You know, they can, you know, put on a 15, 20 minute main event. And if you give that amount of time to any of those top guys that I just mentioned, you're almost guaranteed a really good, if not excellent match. So, you know, it's certainly worked out very well for SmackDown in my view. And of the two shows, that'll certainly be the one that I'll be most looking forward to on a week-to-week basis.
Absolutely. And I think the one last thing we haven't mentioned on that is the swap round of Byron Saxton and, what's his name? The other fella that was on SmackDown has now gone over to Raw.
I call him Jennifer Hudson's husband.
Yeah, that's the fella. Exactly. That's how significant he is on there. But yeah, we've had that switch around as well, which really does make no difference to things whatsoever. But talking of announcers, I mean, we do have, potentially we have some really good things to look forward to. Like you say there, Raw for me, it feels like it's going to be pretty much the same as it's always been. But SmackDown could now be really, really great stuff to watch in the ring. But out of the ring and the commentary table and some of the stuff going on behind the scenes, Mauro Ranallo has now removed WWE from his Twitter bio. Obviously, people reading into that. He's going to be doing some boxing commentary. Lots of talk about what's been going on behind the scenes with Mauro and the mental health issues that he has, and allegations of bullying with JBL. I mean, do you want to go into a bit more detail on that one?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a story that's been rumbling away since before WrestleMania, in fact, when Mauro missed one or two SmackDowns, and it emerged that Mauro was taking some time off due to his bipolar condition and depression as well. And from certain tweets that were made, perhaps cryptically, perhaps by him, but then more explicitly by his very good friend, MMA legend and commentator Baz Rutten, it became clear that part of the reason for Mauro disappearing was the alleged bullying that Mauro was subject to from JBL. And, you know, this story's kind of progressed since then. And since WrestleMania, it's been a big talking point. You know, there's been a lot of mainstream media that has really latched on to this, but there's also been a lot of mainstream media that's completely ignored the story. And that's what really annoys me, that you know, there are certain elements of the mainstream media that have no intention of covering this story, simply because the people that cover the WWE for these outlets are fans of the WWE that quite like to be able to get access to the WWE and WWE superstars for interviews and things like that. And that's something that I found disappointing. But you know, it's a legitimate story there, because bullying is something that's not exclusive to JBL. So for people that are, you know, giving JBL a hard time, no, that's fine and fair enough, but it's really the tip of the iceberg. Bullying and harassment is something that is endemic within the WWE, and it's something that's been there for decades. And a lot of it, unfortunately, comes down to the top guy in the company, in Vince. You know, he is a bully, quite simply. And, he's always behaved in this way because that's just what he knows. That's how he's always operated in business. I mean, for those that watched his interview with Jim Rome some 13, 14 years ago, you know, you saw that firsthand on camera. You know, he doesn't like being questioned, and, you know, he likes to be a very dominating individual and in the bubble that he exists in, you know, that's something that he can get away with. And, you know, it's something that filters down from him, and it goes all the way down to, certain individuals who are classed as locker room leaders. And, JBL was one of those when he was a wrestler. He was somebody who was classed as a locker room leader. And part of that role meant that when newcomers came into the company, part of testing them to see if they could hack it in the WWE was, you know, for the likes of JBL or Bob Holly to test these youngsters, you know, give them a hard time, you know, pull no punches, in matches, and, also give them a hard time, you know, subject them to hazing, you know, backstage, traveling in between shows, all of this kind of stuff. And in this day and age, in any day and age, that's just uncalled for and it's unnecessary. And, as I say, this is just something that's, part of the culture of the WWE, unfortunately. And I think the WWE is trying to bury its head in the sand over this issue and certainly have no intention of getting rid of JBL, because if they do that, it makes it an even bigger story. And if it does, then it draws more attention to all of these other issues within the WWE. And, you know, if they start going further into it and they unearth some of the stories about Vince and some of the things that he subjected his talents to, and some of the things that his executives in the past subjected talent employees to, it really, really would make the WWE look very, very bad. And, they're desperate for this story to go away. Whether it does or not, whether it builds more momentum, we'll just have to keep an eye on over the next, in the next few weeks or so. But it's certainly something the WWE needs to do something about, because, increasingly they'll be scrutinized more and more for this type of stuff. And we've already seen in the last couple of years, the former Hugh Morris, ex-WCW star, who then became the trainer at NXT, pretty much have to be fired because of bullying accusations. So the last thing they want is more attention around this type of thing, especially given that they have their own charity, and that's an anti-bullying charity that does outreach work in schools and things like that. So it'd be highly embarrassing for the WWE for this story to get any bigger. But the only way to avoid it becoming any bigger is to stamp it out and ensure that all of these types of practices that, almost like a time-honored tradition of the WWE or even the wrestling business, are just rooted out.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I think the WWE are just waiting for this one to, they're just going to see out the storm and wait for this one to go away. And as much as I understand people are venting their fury at JBL, I'm afraid firing him would be like taking paracetamol for a broken leg. You know, he's a symptom rather than the actual cause of the problem. But I think we best leave it at that. So lot to talk about tonight. We've got through an awful lot, and like we say, you know, things beginning to look quite interesting for the future. I'm sure we'll get more to talk about next week as the shows with the new rosters begin to settle down. But before we get there, anything that you'd like to plug to the listeners before we sign off for this week?
Just very quickly, I'm on my travels over this Easter weekend, attending a couple of British wrestling shows I'm really looking forward to. There's a show Easter Friday as we take this, which is Fight Club Pro. They've got a big event in Gag's hometown of Wolverhampton. And the lineup is just absolutely mouthwatering. They've got the WWE UK champion in Tyler Bate teaming up with one of the stars of the initial UK WWE UK Championship tournament, Pete Dunne, and also another person who starred on NXT in Trent Seven, going up against Kenny Omega, who's one of the hottest independent stars, who fought in that famous six-star match earlier this year, teaming with the Young Bucks, who, in my opinion, are the best tag team in the wrestling business today. That's going to be an incredible six-man tag team match. And we've also got some other fantastic talents like Penta, El Om, Will Ospreay, Marty Skrull, Zack Sabre Jr. It's just incredibly star-studded with some of the best independent talent around. It's an incredible show. Every match could be a five-star match. That's how good it is. So seven matches of pure awesomeness. I'm looking forward to it. And then I've got on the Monday night, the debut of a new promotion called Lucha Forever. And their show will be live on the Flow Slam On Demand Network. So that's another one I'm really looking forward to. Another really good show with a lot of the guys that I've just named. So, you know, really, really good weekend of action. And yet again, you know, British wrestling, bringing in talent from around the world and putting on some of the best shows that you can see anywhere. So really, really looking forward to the weekend.
So are you going to keep the fans up to date on them shows and more details besides via your Twitter account?
Yeah, sure. I'll be tweeting out from those shows, hopefully, and letting you know how great they are. If these shows are anything less than great, I'll be absolutely shocked. Certainly the Fight Club Pro show, certainly lineup-wise, could end up being one of the best shows in all of wrestling for 2017. That's how good the lineup is. So really looking forward to it. And we'll certainly be tweeting about it and hopefully talking a little bit about it on next week's pod.
Excellent. Look forward to that. You can catch and follow this show on Twitter at @PW_index, where we will make sure if you're not already following more, we'll post them up as well. We retweet some of them things from more over the weekend, so you can share some of that action. But that wraps up this edition of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. As always, I want to thank Mo Chatter for joining me, and we want to thank all of you for listening and hitting that download button. But until next week, from myself, Andy Wales, and my audio tag team partner Mo Chatter, it's bye-bye now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.